Thank you so much, Honor. I am just feeling very privileged to be with all of you today. I have so much respect for this organization, and I know how difficult it is for elementary school principals and deans and assistant principals and anyone else who might be on this call. This is a real tough time of year, I know, coming right back from winter break. So I hope you all had a wonderful, relaxing time and that your first week back is going well. I appreciate you all taking the time today to talk about this really critical subject in our schools. As Honor mentioned, my background is as a special education teacher for students with behavioral disorders. I ran a semi-self-contained classroom for students that were transitioning back from residential and day treatment types of facilities back into the general education school, with my classroom being kind of the transition point to help get them on a solid grounding and get them hopefully both the academic and the behavioral skills that they needed to be successful in the general education setting. I also worked as a dean of students at the middle school level, and for the past 7 years now, I've been working as a full-time educational consultant for Safe and Civil Schools, which if some of you are familiar with Randy Sprick, he is my father, not my husband. That's a common question that we sometimes get, but I've had the wonderful privilege of having him as such a mentor and a role model in my work. And I wanted to start out with this little introduction just to talk about one of my biggest regrets from my time working as a teacher and also working as a dean is that I didn't know then what I know now, both about the importance of addressing absenteeism, but also the incredible capacity that we have as educators to really make a difference for our students and our families in addressing this issue, especially when we're working to address it from students' earliest school experiences at the elementary level. And, you know, one of the reflections that I have is that I think I did what many educators currently do, which is kind of minimizing attendance concerns in comparison to the major academic considerations and behavioral considerations that we are all pressed to be considering on a daily basis. And I think I had a little bit of a mentality of it's not something that I can affect as much change with. In many cases, it is a parent issue and it addition to a student consideration, but also that it was like kind of an out of sight, out of mind issue, that when students are not in school, we're not considering that at the same level as, you know, some of the pressing behavioral difficulties or academic concerns. And one of the reasons that I say this is one of my biggest regrets is because I know that many of my students had major attendance problems, and yet we were not addressing them with the same level of urgency that we were those academic and behavioral considerations. And I just wish I had really thought about and had the tools to know how to affect change on these attendance issues, because how much more academic and behavioral growth might my students have made had we gotten them there to school every single day. So this is one of the areas that I am incredibly passionate about. I'm very, very excited to be able to share lots of great strategies from schools that are making a huge difference with this issue. Just this brief introduction, I already talked a little bit about my background. The format for this session is I'm going to be giving you guys some directed content around this topic of what doesn't work when we're talking about absenteeism and truancy, and also what are some approaches that we're starting to see are having some very great success, especially from a universal level in trying to really prevent kids from having absenteeism issues. I will be having a couple of active engagement participation elements throughout this session, so there will be at least one question where I'm asking you to type in some responses into the chat feature. You should be able to find that in your little menu bar that should be somewhere on your screen. There should be something that says chat, or if you're not seeing that, there's the little three dots that you can click on and it'll pull out the chat feature. We will also be doing one brief poll, so if you can participate in that sort of midway through the session. And then we're planning to reserve the last 10 minutes of the session for question and answer. You can definitely feel free to type in questions throughout the session, but just in order to keep us moving, we'll probably wait to respond to those until the end of the session. And for those of you who are able to stay with us for the entire hour, there will be a raffle at the end of the session, so I'm going to advance to the next section. I've had the great privilege of being approached by ASCD, and we also have our own publishing company, so we co-published two resources. One is the School Leader's Guide to Tackling Attendance Challenges, which is for leadership teams or PBIS-type teams, school climate teams who are trying to tackle attendance issues from a universal perspective. We also have a corresponding resource that can either be used by individual teachers or by schools that are trying to tackle this in a holistic approach, which is a teacher's guide to tackling attendance challenges. How do you work with this at a classroom-based level? And lastly, a functional behavior assessment of absenteeism and truancy, which is a full set of records review forms, observation forms, interviews, et cetera, like a full-blown protocol for applying functional behavior assessment procedures to address absenteeism and truancy, along with a book called Absenteeism and Truancy, Interventions in Universal Procedures that has 25 individual and small group interventions that have been tailored to address absenteeism issues. So we'll raffle one of these at the end of the session for those of you who are able to stay. Now, to get us started, I want us just to talk about sort of the traditional approach that most schools up until at least the last 10 years or so have really been taking to addressing absenteeism issues. And we'll talk kind of throughout the session about what elements of this works and what elements don't. Traditionally, schools have focused, if they are paying attention to metrics of absenteeism, they've been focused on the metric of truancy. And there are many different ways that we can define truancy, but the general concept is that it's absences without school and often parent permission. This is an incredibly important metric to be paying attention to. It has very, very high correlations with dropout, juvenile delinquency, other types of concerns. But one real important consideration is that truancy may not be capturing many, many of the students who have problems with absenteeism, especially at the elementary level. So when we think about absenteeism that occurs in elementary school, it's typically occurring with parent permission. Truancy is also not going to be oftentimes capturing school refusal types of issues, medical-related absences, and what we are now learning is that any type of absence is absence from instruction and that students are potentially falling behind academically as well as becoming disengaged or having other negative effects from missing school. So we need to broaden our focus from just looking at this from a lens of unexcused absence. We also have seen that schools have implemented increasingly punitive, I put interventions in quotes here because they're really not interventions, they are corrective types of procedures. Everything from schools that are using things like suspension for excessive truancy types of issues, which when you think about it logically just doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense, but also looking at things like truancy court, which are highly reactive, oftentimes have a significantly punitive element, so maybe coming along with fines, which we also know that students who have struggles, chronic struggles with absenteeism, many of them are coming from situations of poverty, so fines are potentially putting their families in very, very difficult situations. And that really it is a very reactive type of model. And so what we're going to be trying to work to shift towards is more of a proactive and a positive model that's looking at supports that we want to put in place for our kids and our families. Procedures oftentimes in the past have also been initiated at extremely high levels of absence and often after patterns of absence have occurred for a period of years. So we may not be starting to really intensively intervene with kids until they're in upper elementary, middle, or even high school. I've talked with many schools where their procedures for initiating supports for absenteeism are kicking in at 30 days, 60 days, 90 days of absence. And what we are now learning from the research literature that has emerged in the last 10 to 15 years is that we really need to be much more concerned at a much earlier stage. So when students are missing even 10 absences or more during the course of a year, that we can start to see some correlations with some pretty significant negative effects. So in conceptualizing this kind of new approach, I'm going to show you a brief video in a moment. And what I want you to consider is oftentimes, especially at elementary schools, when I'm working with schools, a common theme that I hear from educators kind of right up front is that you know, this is a parent issue. We really don't have a lot of power to affect change with this. Sometimes there is a little bit of a judgment that goes along with that, where it's really kind of, you know, the parents that their kids are missing too much school, the parents just don't care. They don't value education. They don't think that attendance is important. And one of my follow-up questions to that is, have we actually really taught the value of attending schools? Have we made it a part of our culture? And so continually, as we proceed throughout this webinar today, I want us to be thinking about this idea of building a culture of attendance in our schools. And so what I want us to think about now, and I'm actually going to ask you to respond in the chat feature as I'm showing this video and talking you through a cultural example, is this question of what is required to build and maintain any culture. So I'm going to give you an example from my husband's culture. He is from a culture called the Dagbamba people in northern Ghana. He grew up there and was part of a traditional drumming and dance tradition. But I want you to respond more generally. If we are thinking about any culture, what are the elements that need to be brought into the practices of that community, into the mindsets of that community, and how they all work together to uphold and build any sort of culture? And then we'll talk about how to do that as regards attendance. So go ahead and start typing in ideas as I'm speaking into your chat feature, and we will kind of talk as we go. Thank you, Angela, for getting us started. Angela wrote in, modeling by leaders. And absolutely, with any culture that we have, we need to have continuous modeling. Lance, community, symbols, stories. I'm seeing teaching and reinforcement, family engagement, trust, traditions, right? So continue typing in. I'm going to be speaking over. Hopefully you can hear a little bit of the sound that is coming out from this video. This is a video. My husband, as I mentioned, is a traditional drummer and dancer from the Dagbamba people of northern Ghana, which is in the Tamale area. We took this video this summer when we were visiting with our two small children. We have a 4- and a 6-year-old, and this was actually a group that my husband founded when he was a young man, and it's still now running, even though my husband now lives in the United States. And as I was watching the cultural practices of this group, I was really struck by a couple of elements. One is that in this particular cultural group, they use a tonal language. So the Dagbamba people's language is tonal. And that means that the drummers are actually drumming replications of their spoken language. So when it pans out and you see this drummer that has the hourglass-shaped drum, he is actually speaking through the drum and able to give community messages and important information or upholding values that they have. So in this particular culture, drumming and dance is not separate from the cultural practices, or it's not something sort of outside of everyday life. It's part of the reason that the drummers and the dancers dance in a circle, because they are at all sorts of community gatherings and the entire community is surrounding them throughout that time. One of the other things that I noticed as we were watching this was there were a couple of elders who came, and there were some of the members of this group who didn't know the elders, but as the leaders of the group were moving around the circle, they were bowing to the elders. And so simply through that sort of implicit messaging, the younger members of the group were seeing these elders and they were following through with those practices. So it really just made me think about the power of cultural practices, the power of, you know, as I'm looking at some of your responses, respectful understanding and communication by and for families, safe and involved community. Everyone must be included. So Jill mentioned everyone in capitals. Relationships, trust, shared experiences. We have rituals. We have regular practice and traditions. So these are all of the things that, as we start thinking about this idea of building a culture of attendance in our schools, how do we infuse this messaging, the rituals, the guidance by leaders in the school, but also perhaps leaders in the community? How are we also bringing in all of the stakeholders? So not just one or two people who are helping address attendance, but really trying to get everybody who has a foothold in our schools or is impacted by the experiences of our students in our schools in really playing a part in this value of attendance being something that is important. So something that I encourage you to consider is how do we help get everybody excited and invested in this idea that part of what we want to develop for our kids is a value and an understanding that part of who we are at this school are we come every day and we put in our best effort. So just be thinking about that kind of as we proceed throughout the rest of the presentation. Now, I also want to, as we're framing this in kind of new terms, say that we don't need to do anything brand spanking new with this. We already know what works with changing behavior in our schools. We already know models and frameworks that help us conceptualize ways of affecting change. And one of the models that we really want to think about when we're working from a attendance perspective is starting to put this into our multi-tiered or RTI type of framework. So MTSS, multi-tiered systems of support, maybe you call it multi-layered systems of support or response to intervention, is really this idea that we need to recognize that we get a lot more from prevention and from proactive measures, and then trying to apply increasingly intensive interventions based on the intensity of students' needs. So we're starting to focus on strong universal practices that are teaching students and families the value of attendance, the importance of attendance, and maybe also how to overcome common obstacles. We're looking at ways to motivate students and families to increase their attendance, and then also common supports for kids that have common struggles or barriers and challenges for attending school. We then look at that sort of tier two or maybe yellow zone, if you're putting it in the triangle type of perspective, targeted interventions. So small group or early stage interventions that are assisting students who need perhaps just a little bit of an additional level of support. Finally, looking at intensive wraparound, more complex types of plans for students who have the most significant and complex needs. So diving into our title of our session here, what works and what doesn't work, I'm going to take you through a series of slides that sort of talk about this idea. What is something that we're starting to see has been a traditional approach that may not be as effective as we would like it to be? And what are some potential solutions for looking at that? So our first one here is I really do think we need to start working to shift the mindset in our educational community that is really quite pervasive, that attendance is something that is number one, out of our control, and perhaps number two, out of our level of responsibility or purview. So these are some of the types of statements that I hear sometimes when I go in and I'm initially working with educators is, well, it's really a parent problem. And so there's not that much we can do to change parent behavior, or the parents just don't care. I've heard a lot of folks saying, well, it's really more important that we focus on what we're doing with the kids once they get here. And I'd like to push back a little bit on some of those statements. So the first one is that I really, really strongly believe, and I think that the research is beginning to very much support this, that all of our initiatives are suffering when students are not present, and that we currently have research that's emerging that shows it's not just impacting, absenteeism is not just impacting the individual student that is missing too much school, it's impacting the entire class, it's impacting the teacher. When we think about the prep time that the teacher is having to put in to create makeup work packets or to think about remediation for the student who has missed too much. When we think about the possible friction that occurs between the student who is missing too much and the teacher who is now stressed out because of this, there are many, many different aspects. Oftentimes I ask people during sessions to consider the negative effects of absenteeism. And the negative social effects or behavioral effects are oftentimes some of the biggest ones that I'm hearing from teachers as well as interventionists, that we have kids who are missing critical, lessons on expectations for behavior in the classroom, or their friendships are shifting. And so kids are coming back and their friends are no longer wanting to be around them because they're not consistently there. We also see that, sorry, I'm having to figure out where my bullets are going, that we do have much more power to influence change with this than we may have previously thought. And when I initially started doing this work and focusing on universal prevention, not just intervention, I was a little bit nervous. Are we going to be able to affect broad scale, broad strokes change using relatively simple universal classroom and school-wide strategies. And what has been so encouraging is that both the research as well as the work that I've done directly with schools shows we do have incredible power through universal strategies to make major, major change in student attendance. And really relying on this idea that many students and parents simply don't understand or know the negative impacts of non-attendance, which means that we have a responsibility but also a great opportunity to create change by simply creating increased education through this building a culture of attendance approach. Now, just to kind of give you a sense of how powerful this can be, one of the first groups that I worked with was a group of 15 identified schools in an educational service district type of consortium model in Michigan. The blue bars that you see here was the year before they started implementing universal practices, and I'm going to be sharing examples of these throughout our time together today. Just to give you a sense of what is here, each blue bar represents a single school. These were elementary and middle schools. The year prior to doing this universal work, and you can see that they had between 20 to 45% of their kids hitting a chronic absence metric, and I'll define that in a moment. After approximately a year, I think this data was gathered from the start of the school year until March or so, they had in the year following this universal approach, you can see here almost every school had 5% or less of their kids in the chronic absence category. And this was primarily by focusing on general school-wide and classroom-based strategies, not kid-by-kid intervention. So that's another piece of messaging that I really, really want to come across today is this idea that especially if we have more than maybe 10% of our kids that are being put in this at-risk category based on their absenteeism, we cannot approach this from an individual. Let's create an individual support plan for every single kid, because in most schools, that is rapidly going to overwhelm any of our ability to provide services for those students. So we have to be looking at it from this more multi-tiered perspective. So just to talk about metrics real briefly, going back to that idea of measuring truancy is kind of masking a lot of our problem, especially at elementary school. I also want to emphasize that for those of you who are tracking average daily attendance, which is a wonderful metric to track, it's kind of whole school health, and it's the percentage of students at whatever time during the year you have. It's the average number of days that those kids have been attending. But another piece that's really important to consider is that it is an average across your entire student body. And it is likely that you have lots of students who have really good attendance, maybe even perfect attendance. They are boosting that average up, which means that even with something like 95% average daily attendance, which in many schools is considered really, really good, or it's a goal that they're shooting for, you could have anywhere from 10 to 15% of your kids still in a highly at-risk category, especially if you have lots of really good attenders. You could still have a pretty significant proportion of your population missing too much school. So what the field is now moving towards, and I'm sure many of you on this webinar, part of the reason that you're here is you're seeing an increased push from your district and your state to start monitoring and, more importantly, intervening with students that are in this chronic absence category. And we are now starting to move towards a generally accepted definition of chronic absence. That wasn't the case 10 years ago. But this definition that chronic absence is when students are missing 10% or more of days, which is a combination of both an unexcused absence as well as excused absence and suspension. So we really are just starting to move to this recognition that anytime a student is absent from school, they are potentially falling behind, becoming disengaged, or experiencing other negative effects. So I do encourage you, in addition to truancy and average daily attendance, to be trying to keep a regular pulse on this metric of chronic absence. And that means pulling the data at least every 2 months, if not more frequently, and really trying to do some problem solving around what your data is telling you. Now, another approach that we found doesn't work is trying to assign one or two people to fix your attendance problems at a school-wide level or at an interventionist level. Again, in most schools, what we're seeing is that there's more than a handful of kids. When we start pulling that 10% as a combination of excused, unexcused, and suspension, when we're looking at the data from that perspective, that we may have even hundreds of kids in a school school that have struggles with absenteeism. And that means that this cannot just be assigned to an attendance clerk, an attendance counselor. Sometimes I've worked with some schools where they've actually hired a interventionist to be the person who is kind of fixing the attendance issues for the school. But again, going back to that idea of culture, it really has to be broader than the responsibility of the purview of just one or two people in our schools. So we're going to advocate looking at ways to involve all staff members as well as all other stakeholders, so community members, family members, etc. But I want to focus on staff members for a minute here. So thinking about ways to get our administrators, our teachers, our interventionists, and even our educational assistants, custodians, cafeteria workers, basically every staff member that works in our schools invested and on board and with some practical strategies for how they can actually be a part of this culture of attendance. Now, just to kind of get a sense of where schools are at, and I would like to preface this by saying this is with absolutely no judgment involved, because I know we're all over the board. I would say at the school that I worked at when I was a dean, I would have been responding maybe A or B to this, but which staff members are regularly involved in addressing attendance in your school? And so there is some sort of regular focus and attention to that. They view it as part of their responsibilities, that they're implementing some strategies to try and help address absenteeism either with individual students or kind of at that school-wide level. Are none of our staff members currently doing this? And maybe this webinar is kind of your first consideration for how do we start looking at absenteeism and addressing it. Is it more assigned to one or two people currently? And again, no judgment attached. This is where many, many schools in our country are currently in their level of focus. We have some interventionists and or attendance personnel who are assigned to work on this, but other people really don't view it as part of their responsibility. C, maybe our administrators, our interventionists, and any of our attendance personnel. D, our teachers are very much invested at sort of everybody in the school with our teachers, administrators, interventionists are all involved. E, our educational assistants, teachers, administrators, and interventionists. And then F would be including any of our classified staff members, bus drivers, custodians, lunch cafeteria workers, et cetera. So I'm going to open it up to this poll and turn it over to Honor for a second to run this portion of it, and then we'll continue.
Okay, we've got about 65% have responded to the poll, and people are continuing to get their responses in. We'll leave it open for another couple of seconds here and ask you to finish up. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and end the poll now and share the results. So the winner is 36% said teachers, administrators, and interventionists, followed by 33% said administrators and interventionists, and then 12% said interventionists and or attendance personnel, and the last one was all staff, 10%.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you very much for participating in that. I'm very intrigued by these responses and excited to see kind of where people are at. I actually am encouraged to see that 36%, the highest category, responded that teachers are also involved, because from my experience, and again, I think this is where we're seeing a shift in the field, is that it traditionally had been more A, B, and maybe C. So we're starting to see some great movement in a positive direction. Many of you are really working to address this from a comprehensive level. And for those of you who are in that A, B, C, or even D, I'm going to encourage you to start thinking about how do we do some activities. And, you know, this is part of what we tried to build into our resources with the School Leaders Guide and the Teachers Guide, is how do we initiate some activities with our whole staff where we really are helping people understand the power of everybody being involved in this initiative. One of the great statements that I've gleaned from my father, Randy Sprick, in this work of behavior support in schools is the idea that when everyone does a little, no one has to do a lot. And that the power of, you know, even our custodian greeting kids each day and, you know, building some positive relationships with kids, especially those kids who might miss school, that there's so much power in everybody playing a little bit of a part in building this culture of attendance. One example of this, I'm going to give a shout out to Officer John Calvert, who I believe he's now moved into a State Department position with Kansas State. But when I first met him, he was a school resource officer and was working with a district in Kansas. And he came to a session that I was presenting. And actually, just to illustrate what a phenomenal human being he is and a dedicated educator and resource officer, he actually paid his own way to come to a session that I was presenting at a conference. And he left so fired up with this idea that attendance is such a critical component of how we help our kids be successful and how we help empower our communities, that within a couple of weeks, he had sent me video clips, which I can't show you just because of copyright issues, but of him being interviewed on local news stations. And his whole messaging to the community was, one of the best things that you can do to help your kid be successful in school and in life is to make sure they're in school every day. And John is one of those people that I think built such strong relationships within his community that that messaging coming from him may have even been more powerful than coming from the superintendent of the district, because he was such a beloved figure in that community. He also later that year sent me a rap that he had developed that was being showed in all of the classrooms at the elementary schools that was him rapping about the importance of attendance, and he got some students involved in that as well. He also shared with me some phenomenal stories, including one with a couple of students, a couple of sisters, I believe, whose family was going through some crisis, and these sisters had really stopped coming to school a couple of days a week. Part of it was related to them not having anybody who was kind of helping them get ready each morning and serving them breakfast. He actually got permission from the school and from the family that one day a week, if the students had good attendance for the rest of the week, he could come to the home with his kids and cook them breakfast and get them on their way to school. So it's kind of a contract he had with them. So again, just thinking, we have so many people in our schools who have the power to build relationships with kids and can be incredibly powerful in helping us with this messaging that school is one of the best places that kids can be to help them be successful. Now, going on to this idea, back to that what doesn't work, assigning one or two people to fix our attendance problems, we also encourage schools to apply a team-based approach to drive their universal prevention efforts. And a logical vehicle for this is if you have an existing positive behavioral interventions and supports, PBIS team, or some other team that addresses safety and climate, this might be a very, very logical initiative for them to take on, because they already have hopefully regular meeting structures, norms, use of agendas, etc. But if you don't, one possible consideration if you're really trying to prioritize this is to consider creating a universal team that is meeting at least once a month, if possible more often than that, but having some concerted work time. And really the focus of this team, I would encourage you to preserve the focus at a universal prevention level rather than mixing it with intervention, because what oftentimes happens is if we're in an hour-long meeting, we end up talking about Johnny, who has the biggest attendance problems in the school, and we spend an hour talking about Johnny and not making a difference in really moving the data and helping with strategies to support the broader school-wide population. So having possibly two separate teams or separate times, where one is focused on universal and one is focused more on intervention for the kids that are struggling more significantly. I'm gonna make sure that this is accessible to all of you. This is one of the resources that we included in our school leaders guide. This is just a sample of an attendance team meeting. So if you had an hour-long meeting that we've got real clear agenda and reminder, did we start the meeting on time? Spending 10 minutes reviewing tasks from the previous meeting to ensure that we're continually making gains on any of the priorities we had set in the last time we met. Reviewing potential next tasks and decisions, and then spending 30 minutes with this table here. What are the task priorities that we have? What's going to happen next? Who's going to be responsible for it and when? And then reviewing at the end of our session, kind of what are the responsibilities and when's the next time that we're meeting. So I'll make sure that you all have access to this as a PDF that you can use. In terms of another thing that doesn't tend to work, is a common conception that is that assumption that I alluded to earlier, that kids and parents of kids who don't attend school regularly just don't care. And I am going to encourage people to consider that we sometimes in education have a tendency to take some of our most difficult examples, and some of the kids that have the greatest hardships related to family situations. And we have a tendency to sort of, apply those perceptions to a broader swath of our kids and our families. And while I have worked with some of the really, really tough situations and family members where at a surface level we can say they just don't care about school, that when we dig deeper, it's often much more complex than that, and it's related to negative experiences that the families have had with the school system, or systemic issues that they've encountered related to race, ethnicity, or poverty, or other types of situations. So kind of moving away from a mindset that gives us a little bit of an excuse to not do as much as we might do. Also recognizing that in many cases we really haven't educated kids and families about the importance of attendance. And I encourage you to think about the difference between actually teaching something. So if we're teaching a new math concept, say, how does that differ from telling someone or showing them one time how to do it and then expecting them to understand? And we all know that teaching involves repeated messaging, repeated practice, activities that come from different angles to help us really understand the content, and trying to apply some of those good teaching practices for our kids as well as our families. Also understanding that, you know, we may see a family where the initial perception is that they just don't care about getting their kid to school on time. And when we start to dig deeper, what we oftentimes find is that that kid and that family are trying desperately to get to school, but they don't have gas, or they are, you know, parent is struggling with mental health issues themselves that make it incredibly difficult. So really working to just remove some of those negative perceptions. And again, going back to working to build that culture of attendance. So I'd like to give you some examples right now of some of the powerful strategies that we've seen. And obviously these are just the tip of the iceberg. I could talk about this all day long and give you many, many examples, but I selected a couple of highlights. One of the universal strategies that we've found has been highly successful is the idea of shifting our messaging. And when we think about messaging with attendance, a lot of times one of the first times that people are hearing about attendance is when they've started to miss too much school. So kids start getting letters sent home from the school that they've missed 5 days of school or 7 days of school or however many your sort of protocols kick in. And as I'm talking about this, just be skimming a little bit sort of the messaging that we have in this initial letter home. This is the sample that we have. So we're looking forward to a great year with students in classes ready to learn every day. We've learned that students who miss a few days each month are at far greater risk of academic failure. So we're providing some context about what we've now learned in very parent-friendly or kid-friendly language. Because attendance is so important, please send your kid to school each day unless he or she has a contagious illness or a fever. So one of the other strategies that we've seen has a lot of success is sending home a checklist of how sick is too sick for school. This is one of the resources that we have in all three, I think, of the book resources that I shared at the beginning. So we're actually giving parents a tool for does your kid have a fever of X amount or higher, yes or no? Has your student vomited in the last 24 hours, yes or no? So that they're able to sort of discern minor cold, flu, headache types of situations versus something where they should be keeping their kid home from school. We've included a chart with this letter to help you keep track of your kids' attendance. This actually was a reflection that I had as my son was entering kindergarten, that our lives are so busy, two full-time working parents. I'm actually currently trying to complete a PhD program. I have a 4- and a 6-year-old, that by March, I may have no idea how many times my kid has missed school unless I have a way of tracking it. And so I created a chart for myself. The goal being 9 days or fewer, which is what we call regular attendance, kids missing 5% or less. Again, not every family is probably going to use this, but do we have some families that this would be a useful and an empowering tool for them? Absolutely. Just to share how powerful this has been, we actually have some schools now that have decided to make this a refrigerator magnet that they send home each year to students so that it can go on the refrigerator. They send it home with a little wipeout marker that families can use. We also had some middle schools that started printing this on the inside front cover of each student's planner so that it also becomes a protocol when the student returns from an absence that the teacher is prompting the student to fill it out. It's a little bit of self-monitoring. It's also a tool to sort of initiate some conversation between the teacher and the student as we start seeing a pattern where maybe there's a concern with attendance. Another example, this falls more into the idea of teaching our expectations. So are we providing regular, hopefully weekly or every other weekly short messaging in all classes about the importance of attendance or how to overcome common barriers? So here's an example. We could use an analogy. So why do famous football players still show up to practice for their team? You know, they're at the top of their game, but they still come to the practice. So we have students generate ideas. What does the player who shows up get and achieve? They get stronger. They build supports within their team. They don't let other players down. What does the player who doesn't show up get? They may get benched. They may get kicked off the team. They may struggle to engage in the plays effectively because they haven't practiced. So then we help them understand how does that relate to their attendance in school. Another example of universal strategies, this comes from Kelso, Washington, where they took the idea of using group motivational systems for both school-wide and class-wide levels. I'm only showing three examples here. They actually have about seven or eight more that they were implementing concurrently, so relatively easy, simple strategies to implement, but that are trying to motivate kids at a variety of levels. Barnes Elementary School, their mascot is the Bears, so all of their little systems have a bear theme. You can see here there's the bear attendance tracker, which was basically each month they added up the number of days of attendance across their entire student body with the goal at the end of the year. I think they were shooting for 95% that particular year, which was 56,700 days of attendance across their student body. So they just have a real strong visual to emphasize that. One of the classroom strategies that they used was having a roar book, which was basically in each class, each student, each month that hit the goal of regular attendance, which was missing one day or less, was identified. So you can see here the names of some kids from a particular class. They got to all go down and take a picture in the cafeteria. So these were all of the regular attenders for 1 month and sign their name in this sort of celebrity roar book. This was messaged out on social media. Emails were sent home to honor and recognize these kids. And two students from each class were randomly selected to have a special lunch. This school has one of the sort of cafetorium types of situations, so all of the other students are seated down in the main cafeteria, and what they did is they bought a checkered tablecloth and set out a little picnic for the students. They had like fake candles and flowers that they set at the center, and so two students from each class get to have a special lunch on the stage. They actually were able to get their local McDonald's franchise to provide a special treat each month for the winners from each class, and the principal or the school psychologist sat and had this nice lunch with the students. And in this final one, this is an idea that actually originally came from a school in Kansas where they were using potato heads, not bears, but because they're the Barnes Bears, this is what they did, where each classroom sets a goal for improvement in attendance, and each day that they get that they meet their goal, non-consecutive, anytime they get it, they get it, they get to add a piece to their bear, or in the Kansas example, it was a piece to the potato head. When they reach 10 days, they get a certificate from the principal. The kids get a letter that's sent home congratulating them for meeting their goal. They put up their bear out in the hallway, so we're seeing a real strong visual representation across the school, as well as maybe creating a little bit of simple classroom-to-classroom competition. So we've got lots of different ways that at this universal level we can both teach and motivate at a very broad level. Now, one other thing that I want to address real quickly before we start heading into our wrap-up, because I recognize we're getting close to our time for Q&A, is applying one-size-fits-all approaches across schools to address this issue. And the teaching strategies, the motivational strategies that I just mentioned, the use of data, that's all kind of just good practice that really applies whether we're talking about a very small rural community, whether we're talking about an urban environment, high poverty, low poverty, really whatever demographic group we're talking about within our schools. Teaching the importance of attendance, thinking about how to teach, how to overcome common barriers, motivating staff, students, and families, these are all just good practice. So using universal strategies, is very beneficial, but we also want to think about how does the rural school in Wyoming or the village school in northern Alaska differ from maybe the inner city school in Chicago or LA or the suburban school in Lake Oswego in Portland. So we really want to start to think about what are the common causes in different communities, because they are going to be significantly different. And it's part of the reason that I love the work that I do working directly with schools and districts, because when we get to this portion, it becomes a matter of problem solving and trying to figure out what data do we need to collect to identify the common causes of absenteeism. We have some great examples of mining your data, which I just don't have time to go into today, but also using things like an informal survey of students and or parents to identify what are the common causes of absenteeism, and then getting smart in the universal approaches that we're applying. So a couple of examples of tailored strategies. Many of the rural schools that I work with in Wyoming, Montana, Oregon, et cetera, identify that hunting and fishing season is the real common time where families are taking their kids out to go and hunt or to fish, which is an important family value. In some cases, maybe it is even a subsistence value that they have. And so a lot of the schools, when they've identified that this is a significant issue, have decided, you know what, let's stop fighting that trend. Let's actually create a break. So we're going to create a week long instead of just spring break. We're going to add a week on somewhere in the summer, and we're going to have a fall break that is our hunting and fishing break, and encourage families to be absent during those times rather than when school is in session. Now, that may make sense in rural Oregon. It may not make sense in inner city Chicago, right? We probably don't have a ton of students who are missing for hunting and fishing season in inner city Chicago. So there, we want to be looking at what are the common causes in a particular school or district in that particular area. One common thing that I see is that if we actually map out neighborhood of residence where kids are chronically absent, we actually see that within the no busing zone, so there's that sort of radius where kids are not bused, that the farther away from school they are within that circle, that we may see increases in absenteeism, especially if we are in an area where there's unsafe traffic crossings that kids need to move across, maybe areas where there's neighborhood violence like gang violence, and also areas where it's really, really cold or really hot. So thinking about strategies like, some schools have initiated a neighborhood volunteer group that is walking groups of students to school to cover those unsafe traffic crossings or be providing supervision with risks of neighborhood violence. When we're dealing with concerns of it being too cold, thinking about how do we make sure that all students have the warm weather gear that they need, or possibly looking at organizing carpools for some of the students that may struggle. Another common difficulty that I hear across all different populations is kids who are not sleeping well enough at night. So we don't have good sleep routines at home. We lack effective bedtime and morning routines. So things are totally chaotic and kids are missing the bus or they're coming late to school. I saw one person asking as a question, do these same strategies apply to the 30-minute to an hour late tardies? And absolutely. When you have students who are coming late each day, any of these same approaches with teaching, motivating, but also thinking about supports that are needed at the universal level, we can think about how to be sending home messaging about sleep routines, about maybe having our nurse or others filming short videos that could be sent out on social media about how to establish effective bedtime routines and things like making sure that there's no technology in the bedroom to be keeping kids up all night. So just to kind of wrap us up, a few guiding principles for our general approach. We have to start with the belief that this behavior can change. And if we are hearing that messaging from our staff about this is really not something that we can make a difference with, considering ways to do some staff development and be providing examples. I have tried to provide a lot of examples of ways to get staff on board with this belief that behavior can be changed in our book resources. And understanding that data is incredibly powerful to drive our decision making, and so really making sure that we are monitoring that chronic absence data regularly. An increased focus on prevention and proactive measures. So again, I've just been wildly encouraged with so many schools that have contacted me from K all the way up through 12 who have shared that the universal strategies have done so much to minimize the number of kids that have attendance concerns, that are really starting to build the habit of attendance and the culture of attendance in their schools. And that really then does preserve the resources that we need with our social workers, counselors, behavior specialists, et cetera, to have time and space to work with the kids that have a more complex or resistant issue. And lastly, an understanding that both at the universal as well as, especially when we start getting into individual student intervention, we have to address the causes of absenteeism, because one size fits all approaches or trying to just say, let's put sort of a blanket attendance intervention rather than one that addresses function, is really going to have minimal effect in our schools. So for our raffle, again, I'm going to be raffling these three resources. I believe what we're doing is I've randomly selected three numbers, and I'm going to give those numbers to Honor, and based on the people that were able to attend throughout the entire session, we will get in touch with you via email to share with you that you have received this resource. So be looking for an email either from me, I'll be sharing my email at the end of this session, or from Honor. Maybe it'll come from both of us to make sure that you get it. For having won those raffle prizes, and we'll get your address to find out where you send them. If you are interested in getting this, if you don't win the raffle, go to ancorapublishing.com, and that's where you can find all three of these resources. So for our Q&A, I'm going to kind of scroll back through and see if we've got some additional questions, but feel free to type in other ones here. If I am not able to respond to your question, please feel free to email me at jessica@safeandcivilschools.com. You can also message me or follow me on Twitter. A lot of my tweets they're all related to education, but a lot of them are related to attendance because it is one of my strongest passions. And if you are interested in any future collaboration or thinking about ways to bring this work more deeply into your school or your district, please feel free to get in touch, and I can either point you to other resources or look at ways to explore collaboration with you. All right, so I'm going to scroll back, and Honor, feel free to let me know if you saw some questions that I should address.
Yes, I tried to copy them forward for you.
Great.
One was just recent. Let's see. There was a question here. Because of our school philosophy, we avoid external rewards and motivators. What methods do you use that do not rely on extrinsic motivators?
So that's a great question, and I think that if you're really not interested in using extrinsic motivators, just thinking about ways to have collective goal setting. So, you know, the idea of rather than using some sort of reward based on classroom improvements for attendance, doing something like each class has a graph and they're graphing each day the number of students in attendance, and they're trying to bump it up to certain goal levels. You can also, you know, definitely from a motivational perspective, making sure that it's not just extrinsic rewards, I think, is incredibly important. While they can provide sort of a fun way to boost it, we look at oftentimes using like intermittent types of rewards, so it's random rewards rather than some sort of structured system, but also making sure that the motivational aspect is really the relationship building and the you know, teachers greeting their students at the door each day, and when a student has been absent, making sure that, you know, the teacher is welcoming them back and saying, hey buddy, we missed you yesterday. You know, if we see that a student has been gone for a day or two, maybe seeing if another student wants to call them or send them a little message that says, you know, I hope that you're back at school, or if there's anything that you need help with, Ms. Sprick said that, you know, she'd love to get in touch with you to work through this. So relationship building, goal setting, using all of our good strategies that we use that really are trying to stay away from more of those external motivators.
Susan asks, can you provide some research articles that support the increased risk for academic difficulties and dropout? We have many opinions not based on research about.
Yes, absolutely. Actually, the entire first chapter of our school leader's guide and our teacher's guide have tried to summarize a lot of the current research literature. There's continuously more that's emerging. I can definitely follow up with this email with some of the sort of seminal research that we've we've got coming out. I also highly, highly recommend going to the Attendance Works website, partially just for their research tab. They have one tab that summarizes and synthesizes most of the research in this area, and also has links to a lot of the articles that are open access. But they also just have a wonderful wealth of free resources, webinars, et cetera. We work very directly with them and try to meet with Hetty and Cecilia, the directors, on a regular basis. So all of the processes and procedures are very aligned.
What is that website?
Attendance Works, and I think it's .org.
.org, okay. Another question, could we have that meeting agenda document as an editable document so we can craft it to meet our needs?
I will check with my office. I have a PDF version, but I'll see if I can get them to convert it. I don't know how to do that, but we've got editors here who may be able to help out. So I'll try and work on that today.
But if not, we'll at least post it and then you guys can do it for yourselves.
Great.
There was a question from Ashley about how could this work in a high school where kids change classes? Attendance tracking.
Okay. So from a messaging perspective, one of the things that we've found is most beneficial is having, like if you do have regular attendance lessons, which again, when I say lessons, it's really more like messaging, so little 5 to 10 minute things once a week or every other week, that you could rotate them through classes. So it might be week one, it's happening in first period, week two, it's happening in second, third, et cetera, so that we're never impacting too much any one class. With motivational systems and things like that, we have some high school teachers who have decided, like, we're actually going to put the graphs of the attendance on a flip chart so that each period we just do a little 30-second ritual of, you know, marking how many kids are in attendance each day and whatever rewards or not using rewards that we're going to put with that, we can do so. And when I'm talking about rewards, like, you know, if I had a random system where we get to 10 days, I'm talking like there's give a class cheer. There's one card that says everybody gets a congratulations letter that's sent home. There might be like one bigger reward in there, but most of them are very, very low cost or no cost so that it is very, very efficient within our school system. I can definitely also send some high school examples. We have a phenomenal example of a, alternative high school that actually improved their average daily attendance by over 9% in their first year of implementation, and it was just kind of miraculous, and it was all mostly through these universal strategies. So I'll try and send some ideas along for that as well.
That's awesome. Okay, one last question. We've had so many great comments in the chat box. It's been running along while you've been talking, so thanks to everyone for your ideas and sharing for that. This recording we will have this recording posted within 24 hours on our website. And if you're a member, you'll be able to download it. I don't know that all our comments that are in the chat box will get into it, but at least you'll get the ideas from our speaker. Maxine asked the question, many of our families take vacations at random times of the year. Does anyone have suggestions, you know, for how to deal with that?
Absolutely. Yes, this is a very common problem, and I think the first step has to be education. And one of the things that I've realized is that so many parents, and it's actually been funny with my son now being in school, the number of kind of awkward conversations that like parents in my son's school may not know what I do. And so they're saying things to me about like, oh yeah, we decided, you know, our kid's doing fine, so we're going to go to Disneyland for 2 weeks because that way we don't have to deal with lines during X time, and me kind of having to bite my tongue and be like, it's not my job. It's got to be the school's job. I don't want all of the parents to hate me for being that know-it-all parent. But really starting with education, that a lot of parents don't realize that even if their student is doing fine, if they are taking those discretionary vacations, the amount of time that it takes a teacher to consider, how do I get that student caught up? And that's meaningful time that is being taken away either from the teacher being with their family and recharging their batteries, or them having their prep time for meaningful instruction or differentiation or making sure that, you know, they're supporting all of their kids. So that's usually kind of the first avenue that I would recommend taking. Beyond that, relying a little bit on your policies, where if your policy policy states that vacations are not considered excused, that you are saying, you know, that is up to your discretion, but it is going to be counted as unexcused absence. And if we do have any procedures and policies around that, that especially if your student is missing in addition to this vacation, that it may trigger some of our more reactive types of systems.
Thank you, Jessica, so much. If your question has not been asked, a lot of good questions here, please feel free to contact Jessica via her email right there. On behalf of NAESP, I'd like to thank everyone who has participated today. Again, Jessica, thank you so much for this afternoon's presentation.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.